All right, let's head to the hotline and welcome in our very next guest. We have Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, standing by. Michael, as always, a pleasure to have you with us, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. Happy to talk to you guys again.
Well, Michael, a lot to digest here today. And I know last week we had contemplated the idea of getting into this Alec Baldwin roast, and we decided to table it until today. It debuted on Comedy Central last night. These roasts are always so doggone funny, borderline uncomfortable at times, but just your thoughts on the Alec Baldwin roast last night, because it seems like they didn't really pull any punches.
No, and I'm glad we decided to wait to talk about this, because it was great to actually see it before commenting on it. I think this was one of Comedy Central's best roasts that they've done in several years. It sort of lived up to the classic tradition of the roast that sort of started out of the Friars Club in the 60s and 70s and have sort of evolved over time. So I thought this was a particularly good one. There were a lot of really great highlights that I don't think I can repeat on the air, but some of the big performers that I thought were good, I thought Blake Griffin was especially hilarious. He's been honing his skills in L.A. during the offseason and then during his time with the Clippers over the last few years, so he really was a lot funnier, I think, than I expected. Caroline Ray had a really great line where she said, Alec, where are your brothers tonight? God knows they're not working. But I think the two big scene stealers of the night, the first was a surprise appearance from his daughter, Ireland Baldwin, his daughter with Kim Basinger, who he notoriously was caught screaming at very viciously on a leaked voicemail several years ago. She had a joke that was, my dad is more than some lunatic who loses his temper. He also loses Emmys and Oscars and the custody of his firstborn child. So that was certainly one big highlight. But certainly Robert De Niro was, I think, the big star of the night, even more so than Alec Baldwin. I mean, obviously he's a legend. He's an Oscar winner. He's Robert De Niro. And I think there were a lot of jokes at his expense. But once he got up onto the dais and started going in, I think he just sort of killed it, was a perfect capper on the night. So I think this is going to be a hard bar, or a high bar, rather, for Comedy Central to top with their future roasts. I think it certainly helps to have someone who's as polarizing as Alec Baldwin certainly is.
And I've always enjoyed these roasts. I like the fact that they don't do them 800 times a year, too. It's nice because it's one of those things that you really have to gear up for every year. And it just never really seems to get old. The format's something you don't ever mess with. And it seems like they've really done a nice job of picking out the right person every year. And I think that could be a very difficult thing to do, because a lot of what's discussed is somewhat topical, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that it's helped that they've really, having done so many of these now, they've built up such a great stable of comics that will appear almost every time. I mean, we know Jeffrey Ross is the king of roasts. We know he's going to be there. But Nikki Glaser in particular was another one who was there for this roast, who I think has been doing a lot recently. She's very, very funny. And Adam Carolla, of course, another guy who has a long history of this. So I think that what they've really done is they've figured out the formula of who to have on as guests. They have a nice mixture of non-comedians as well, like Blake Griffin or Caitlyn Jenner for this roast. And you can really tell that that diverse mixture of people and picking the right person to roast has had some varied success. But when they do it right, it is really enjoyable and very, very funny.
Last week, one of your picks to click did extraordinarily well at the box office this weekend. You know, Hustlers was a movie that you mentioned that people should certainly be watching, and it did really well at the box office, much, much better, I think, than a lot of people thought. Were you surprised at all at just how successful it was?
Yes and no. I think it beat its industry projections by about $8 million this weekend, so I'm not surprised that it had success. I think I'm surprised that it had as much success as it does, or it did. But I think there's a lot going on here, and I think this is a movie that is just going to continue to grow at the box office and as well as in the awards conversation over the next few months. I think the biggest thing is, first of all, rave reviews out of Toronto, especially for Jennifer Lopez, who is a massive star. This was her highest opening for a live-action movie ever, a really big deal for her, especially as she was one of the producers on the film. But it also helped that they had like a lot of star power with Constance Wu, Cardi B, Keke Palmer, Lizzo, amongst many others. And these are all women that have massive social media following. So I think it certainly isn't necessarily like that guarantees an audience, but it definitely helps to get people out there. But I think probably the biggest thing is that this is was marketed correctly as a movie about women by women. It was directed by Lauren Scafaria, who put out The Meddler a few years ago, which was really great, and Seeking a Friend at the End of the World before that. And it's a movie that it's a movie about strippers, but it's not the same way that Showgirls or Striptease is. It's very much a character-driven film, and that was reflected in the marketing, and it was reflected in the audiences. About 67% of the audience this weekend for Hustlers was women. So I think the high praise, the combination of the cast, and just an excellent marketing campaign really helped this movie get some very quick buzz. I expect to see it continue to be a solid performer at the box office, and we're not going to stop hearing about this movie anytime soon. I think it has some legitimate Oscar buzz surrounding it.
Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Well, while Hustlers did really well, any idea why The Goldfinch did so poorly at the box office this weekend? Seems like the critics really didn't like this.
Yeah, this was, I read recently that pretty much every year there's an early movie with Oscar buzz that once it premieres just tanks so so poorly that it's just sort of mercifully put out of its misery. And I think that that is The Goldfinch this year. This was really heralded as a big award season contender. It's based off of a best-selling novel and really had all of the sort of earmarks of a prestige adult Oscar drama literary adaptation, the whole deal. But it really had a hard time coming out of Toronto. It got kind of beaten up pretty badly by the critics, and I have not seen it yet, but it sounds like it was a pretty unanimous distaste for the film. If you've read the book, you know that it's kind of a very sprawling, long narrative, and it kind of, the book itself had sort of a disappointing ending, and all of that was transferred to the film about 2.5 hours. It's kind of hard to get a lot of the subtle nuances of all these characters and this massive story into 2.5 hours. And sticking with the book's original ending, I think, really irked a lot of critics. It really didn't go over very well. So this was one I think that was just a massive disappointment, despite having the pedigree of an Oscar film. The interesting thing, though, is that this film was co-financed between Warner Brothers and Amazon. So that's really the first time this has happened, where you've had one of these massive streaming giants team up with a studio to make a film happen. So it'll be interesting to see if the bad performance and the bad reviews kind of get rid of that collaboration in the future. It's obviously mutually beneficial for both sides. So we'll see if the negative reaction to The Goldfinch affects that, but that's certainly something to keep an eye on, kind of under the radar in this film too.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Do you think that kind of getting those award accolations, people talking about it, oh, here's Oscar buzz, Emmy buzz, you think that hurts some movies? I mean, in the sense that those usually aren't the ones that top the box office ratings.
I think so. I think that it sets expectations very high, yeah, especially a film like this, which seems to have been made with kind of aiming for an Oscar in the first place. It comes out as a fall release at film festivals, a high prestige cast, including Nicole Kidman and others. And it just sort of like has all of these earmarks of an Oscar movie. And I think we saw it last year with the film Life Itself. It came from the guy who created This Is Us. He'd had a lot of success. This was sort of his next step after winning all those Emmys, was to go into Oscars. And it was actually the sacrificial lamb at Toronto last year, and just sort of was completely eviscerated and performed very poorly. So I think that when you set those expectations very high, you have to match them. And a lot of times, at least every year, there's at least one film that sort of shoots for that and fails miserably. So, I think expectations sometimes do hurt.
Well, it too led the way at the box office this past weekend. This is obviously a huge time of the year for horror films, and this one seems to have a ton of intrigue. How much longer do you think It 2 is going to lead the way at the box office, and what do you think's coming along the way here the next few weeks that might unseat it at the top?
Well, I don't think it's going to stay at the top of the box office, honestly, through this weekend. I would be surprised if it did. It's performed very well. The whole It franchise has now grossed over $1 billion worldwide, so a pretty massive success. But it did see its audience drop by about 55% from the opening week to the second one. So I think a lot of people that missed it opening week that wanted to see it went to go see it. So I expect to see its numbers kind of drop. But it's also going up against some really big competition this weekend. There are three big notable releases hitting the box offices this weekend. You have first Ad Astra, which is the Brad Pitt movie where he plays an astronaut who has to go into space to find his missing father, Tommy Lee Jones, who might be responsible for a massive catastrophe on Earth. It's gotten great reviews. Brad Pitt especially is getting a lot of great reviews. So that's a big one that will have some competition. So does the Downton Abbey movie, which is coming 4 years after the end of the show. I don't think that it will share a lot of audience with people that went to go see it, but it certainly is another option at the box office. But the third big competitor is a new Rambo film, Last Blood, Sylvester Stallone stepping back into the character. This has a chance to be a big action hit across several different age ranges. So I think with the combination of those three films, it will be hard for it to hang on to the top of the box office. But I do expect it to kind of hang around for a few more weeks, especially, as you said, we enter that horror movie season.
As well as it's done with the first two chapters, do you think there's anything more the studio can do with that? I know the book ends here, the original movies ended here. Do you think they'd try and do something else with it?
I don't know. I think that maybe there is such a thing as kind of pushing it and too much of a good thing if they really try and stretch it out. But I do think more than anything we'll start to see, and we already have, but I think we'll start to see even more of these sort of reboots and revisions of especially classic Stephen King, but classic horror films. We've seen a new Chucky film, Child's Play, come out this year. They're redoing Candyman. So I expect we're going to continue to see this trend, which really isn't new. If you think about all the reboots of Friday the 13th and all of those movies, I think it's a continuing trend that it is now sort of the poster child for.
Was Candyman really that big a success to be rebooting it?
Evidently. Maybe it'll be a bigger success this time around.
And watch for the bees. Well, they're going to have to find bees, right? Aren't we losing those?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, apparently we are, but that's a different subject.
Well,
for
I'm
a
just saying, should
entirely.
They be in movies at all?
All right, well, changing subjects entirely, my friend. This whole Dennis Rodman upcoming 30 for 30, apparently there was recently a private screening for it. I can't believe it's taken this long for there to be a 30 for 30 made on Dennis Rodman, as polarizing a figure as he was back in the 90s. This is something I think that should have been done a while back, but how excited should we be about this upcoming 30 for 30?
You know, personally, I'm very excited for it. He's obviously one of the more flamboyant sports personalities we've seen probably ever. But really in the last, since he retired, he's been known for just sort of being the weirdo that he is, for his relationship to North Korea and his appearances on The Celebrity Apprentice and all of that. But I think with this documentary, what I'm excited to see is sort of a look at Dennis Rodman, the basketball player, as well. I think one of the reviews I read said that it's hard to remember, knowing kind of the backstory of who he is and how kind of wild and crazy he is, that he was a heck of a basketball player, too. So I think that that's an element that I'm very excited for. From everything I've heard, it's kind of an unconventional documentary. It's narrated by Jamie Foxx, and there's a lot of references that he makes to the fact that you're watching a documentary about Dennis Rodman. But the big thing that I've heard, the big takeaway that most critics that have seen it already have said, is that it doesn't really try and give you to answer the question of who is Dennis Rodman and how did he become this way. It sort of just leaves you to figure that out. But certainly an interesting story about a very, very interesting guy, one that I will be very excited to see.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it either. Again, because if you were around in the 90s, you know just how polarizing a figure Dennis Rodman was. All right, Michael, before we let you go, we need to get this week's Picks to Click.
All of Fall TV comes back next week after the Emmys this Sunday, but a few things this week to check out. First, on Wednesday, American Horror Story returns. This iteration is called 1984. It is inspired by classic 80s slasher films, so that will certainly be a fun one if you're a fan of American Horror Story. And the big thing to stream this weekend, at least for me, is on Netflix, they have the Between Two Ferns, the movie, with Zach Galifianakis. They've taken the popular web series where he interviews people and is just kind of a doofus in the process, and have turned it into a feature. It has a massive list of celebrities in it, including Will Ferrell, Matthew McConaughey, Chrissy Teigen, David Letterman, Keanu Reeves, Chance the Rapper, and a lot more. It looks very funny, and I can't wait to watch it this weekend on Netflix.
Very, very good stuff. I've seen an episode or two before. Oh, man. Great, great stuff. Wait, didn't he have Obama on at one point?
When he was still president, I
think. He did. Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Good, good stuff. Well, Michael, as always, we appreciate the insight. We appreciate the time, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.